Thank you, everyone, for coming. Just to respect everyone's time, you all in the audience and our speakers, I'm going to try and start right on time. My name is Jonas Stolberg. I'm a general surgeon and health services researcher, and I do a lot of opioid reduction research at Northwestern. My co-moderator is Melissa, who is still on her way. I'm very excited to kick off this session on opioid-sparing practices in surgery. And highlight a lot of the work that we're doing. This is a two-part session. The first one will focus on general practices that you can use in your clinics today for most patients. I do have some funding related to opioid reduction efforts. I get NIH funds, AHRQ, PSEER, and some others, none of which are directly related. We have a wonderful session, four great speakers. We'll talk about patient engagement, pre- and intraoperative strategies, some postoperative strategies during the hospitalization, so inpatient, and then how do we transition that to an outpatient setting. We are all here because the statistics are shocking, and we hear about it in the lay media, and we hear about it all the time on the news, and that's for good reason. This is a slide directly from the CDC that 197,000 people died from overdoses related directly to prescription drugs. And so we've heard these numbers over and over again, and we all realize that something must be done. But I think the one thing that I hear when I talk to folks about what we can do as surgeons is, well, how does this actually relate to me as a surgeon? I mean, I don't manage chronic pain for the most part. I don't see heroin addicts. Why is this directly related? And so I'm going to tell a short story, and this is a true story, and it's one of my mom's. And so this was 2017. It's after even those statistics are read out. She had three relatively minor surgeries. She had a thumb surgery, she had a dental procedure, and then she had a toe procedure. Now, all three of these I would consider minor because they were outpatient procedures. The surgeons all used multimodal techniques. They had blocks. They had everything else while she was in the procedure itself. She wasn't under general anesthesia. All of these things that, you know, we're probably going to talk about. But at the end of the day, every single one of them gave her a prescription for 30 pills. And so this isn't just a problem with me. It isn't just a problem with you. It's a systemic problem across all of us, right? It's a problem with the way that we think about pain management and how we think about treating patients. And if this were just Tylenol or not something of abuse, it wouldn't be much of a problem. But the reality is that she went home and she didn't use a single one of those. She just used Tylenol and ibuprofen, and she figured she'd have it if she needed it and ice, and she was fine. So she didn't need those pills. And that's a story we have now been able to replicate over and over again with data. And this is just one of the many studies out there that have now started to come out where they measure how much do we prescribe and how many do patients actually use. And over again, we tend to see a theme. We see this theme that patients use on average about five or fewer. But yet, across many, many specialties, orthopedics, thoracics, general surgery, across all of them, we tend to use 30. And many reasons, that's just the default in our hospital systems, and so that's what we use. And that pattern's been repeated over and over again. And as I said, if this were just Tylenol, ibuprofen, not a scheduled medication, not one of abuse, it wouldn't be a problem. But because it is a drug of abuse, we have this problem of diversion. And now the slide, that picture on the right, it's a little bit blurry, and it kind of doesn't matter, because the point is that that gray bar that you see repeated over and over again, those are non-medical users obtaining their drugs, obtaining prescription drugs from friends and family. That means the single most common way that anyone who's a non-medical user of prescription drugs is getting them is just because they're available in the community. So when we're prescribing, we have to think about that. We don't just have to think about our own individual patient, but that patient's family and the society in which that patient and the context in which that patient lives. And furthermore, we like to say, and we're looking at the data now and saying, oh, well, prescription drug deaths might not be going up nearly as fast as they once were, and now really it's a problem of heroin or synthetic fentanyl or other drugs. But this is another slide directly from the CDC. 75% of heroin users. When they ask heroin users, they started with prescription drugs. So it is both a gateway to other drugs, and it's also a drug of abuse in and of itself. And so we need more responsible practices, and the American College of Surgeons has answered that call. And over the last couple years, there have been many, many efforts across the Quality Committee, across the PAC. For those who are politically active, there was just a bill signed yesterday by the president that the PAC was very involved in, and across the Patient Education Committee, which is co-sponsoring this particular event. There are provider education materials like this talk. There was a credentialing talk on Sunday that I know many of you may have come to, and the college is actively trying to get provider education into your hands. We also, as part of the Patient Education Committee, have developed patient education materials, and I apologize, that's actually a picture of the first version, but we have the most updated version here. It comes with tent cards that you can see here, and I think many of you got a handout, and if you didn't, there are more in the back, of safe opioid prescribing produced by ACS for you to give to your patients. It's downloadable. We have printed versions in the back, as I said. And I wanted to just quickly, before we moved into the talks, highlight one other activity which is just starting, and we have some preliminary evidence, but it's combining this concept of how do we get real-time data on our patients. So ACS has partnered with this pilot program with HealthLoop. There are other groups out there that have data collection apps, but we're starting with HealthLoop so that we can get a proof of concept. HealthLoop, for those of you who don't know, is a patient engagement app. And the reason that we're starting with that is because I've been using it for 2 years. And one of the things that I did was I built in a pain management component to it, sort of this what they call a separate loop on top of it. All it was is a standard set of questions that start preoperatively with education, ask patients about pain afterwards, and ask patients about opioid use. And because of that, I'm able to draw this diagram out that you can see on the right there. And essentially, on my patients now, I can say, oh, well, for my inguinal hernias, on average, this is how many they're using. This is how much it affects their pain. And I can actually titrate in real time how my patients are doing. And so we've started to roll that experience up to, well, can we just socialize that? Anyone who's actively using HealthLoop, this has now been turned on as of 3 months ago, and the concept is very straightforward. It's very quality improvement oriented, right? We measure the data, we learn from the data, and then we can adjust. And so the project objectives are to test the feasibility of leveraging this mobile platform for education and patient-generated data collection. And you can see we're just starting this process. But the idea is to be able to produce something like this and to produce it in real time. Now, we started this about 3 months ago. I will be presenting the data at ACS NISQIP. And then again, next year, we're hoping to have some finalized data to give feedback. But the physicians who are already using this are already getting active feedback. In 3 months, we have 1,600 patients enrolled across the country in 5 different states. And so this is just saying that there are many, many efforts across many spectrums of the college and many interests in trying to approach this opioid crisis from multiple different angles. And data, especially going forward, will be a key part of that. We need to understand, and I bet if I asked all of you in the crowd, and you were really honest with yourselves, if you go back 5 years, how many of you knew how many pills your patient took after each case, right? How many consciously decided, well, I'm going to give this patient 7 of these or 12 of these or use all of these? This data has to come to light for us to be able to know what's going on and make changes. And with that, today you're going to get presentations from really experts in the various fields that will give you the data that you need and the practices you need in your clinics to go and start practicing better opioid prescribing and better pain management tomorrow.